Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're live, the Chip Williams Podcast, episode 4. We're still rolling without intro music, although I am in the works of getting that. I am Chip Williams, and we finally have another guest other than Kevin Hughes. It's Jonah Jordan from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, like myself. He's also the Memphis Tigers writer for 24/7 Sports. Jonah Jordan, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing, man?
I'm splendid. Thank you for kind of doing this impromptu podcast. I've been telling everybody I'm going to record a strictly basketball podcast, and I keep not doing it. So finally, we're doing it. We're doing this thing. We'll talk a little football, like a little bit, but we're going to talk mostly basketball because there's a lot of basketball stuff that I want to talk about. And let's start off with the hot topic of the day, Mario Chalmers. Mark Stein, who, as we all know, is big buddies with John Hollinger from his days at ESPN. So Mark Stein, he gets all the scoop. He gets all the Grizzlies scoop. And so anytime he tweets a rumor about the Grizzlies, I think everybody tweets it as pretty serious, you know, because you would assume that he has a pretty good in with the Grizzlies front office of what they're doing, right? So he tweeted that the Grizzlies have serious interest in Mario Chalmers and tried to, or at least they've had discussions about bringing him to Memphis. Your initial reaction, what did you think when you first saw that?
Well, at first I was confused because Mario Chalmers really isn't that great at basketball anymore. I think Austin Reynolds, you know, went on and on and on about this today, so I didn't feel like I had to. But he's just, without LeBron, he hasn't been that good. But as the day's gone on, I've realized, like, I'm pretty sure that either a third team is going to be involved if they do this, which I don't think they will, because it just doesn't make sense to do it right now. It reeks of desperation. It's just a panic move. But I think if they do it, it'll end up involving Luol Deng.
Really? Coming to the Grizzlies?
Yes. They've had interest in him in the past. It's either him or Gerald Green. It's either they're trying to do this weird thing where they collect all the greens of the NBA. I just can't see it.
They just need to get a deal worked out with Willie now. Willie Green.
Oh,
they'd have every green that's ever played basketball.
Don't joke. Chris Wallace probably loves Willie Green.
There's not too many basketball players I feel like that Chris Wallace doesn't love. So you think third team? You think they're searching for a third team?
Yeah, if it's just Mario, I think it's probably going to involve a third team where the Grizzlies don't really have to give much up besides like Vince Carter, where they send like Vince Carter a third team, that third team sends a second round pick somewhere, and then Chalmers ends up in Memphis.
Okay. I mean, I could definitely see something like that. Because, listen, the Grizzlies, they don't really have many attractive trade assets. You know, they can't really trade a first-round pick until, like, 2022 or something like that. Or they can't guarantee that pick will go to a team until around that time, basically 7 years from now, because they've already promised two away, and you can't trade picks in back-to-back years. So it's a long time before they can trade another first-round pick or at least guarantee that they'll get it. And here's the thing that gets me with the Mario Chalmers stuff is you said it, he's just not very good anymore. You know, if this trade was happening 3 years ago, you would feel a little bit better about it. His numbers look better from 3 years ago or 2 years ago even. And I think probably part of that or a decent amount of that is a function of the fact that he played with LeBron James. And everybody is awesome with LeBron James for the most part. Last season when Chalmers was having to play without LeBron, a -7 net rating per 100 possessions. So he was bad. He was very bad last season. And I don't get it. So here's
what
this signals to me.
It's the same thing with Jeff Green, though.
They're
going to go get a guy and, like, he's going to be better in our system. And they haven't proven that when they go get guys, they get better in their system. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and with shooters too, they don't flourish in Memphis. They do not succeed in Memphis. In fact, they usually are significantly worse in Memphis than where they were previously or where they go after. you know, it's a strange thing. It's just kind of a function of, I guess, how the Grizzlies play basketball. So
yeah.
What this signals to me, their interest in Mario, is a couple of things. One, Beno Udrih is clearly hurt, and he's more hurt than the Grizzlies are letting us know. He hasn't looked great, but I don't think he's looked atrocious. But I think this signals that they're worried. They're worried about Beno making it through a full season. And number two is they're not ready to trust Russ Smith. That's very evident to me if they feel like they're needing to go get essentially a fourth point guard, right? I mean, they just don't trust Russ.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, it was pretty evident last night that they're not into playing him or Jordan Adams yet. When Vince Carter wrote the recap today, Vince Carter and Beno played both more than them in a game in which you lost by 50 points. You can't give the young guys, neither one of them played over 10 minutes. I think they both played 8 minutes and 6 minutes. They
right.
just have no confidence in them. I don't know what else they expect them to do. They both played well in summer league. They've done, and if we haven't read anything that they're doing horrible in practice. I mean, Jordan had the knee surgery, but you know, he's 100% by all accounts. And then Russ Smith is over there. He's looked great every time he's played, every single time. There's no reason he shouldn't be playing. It's becoming ludicrous. It's becoming by the game. It's becoming even more dumb.
Yeah, it's so. The only thing with Russ is he's just super out of control at times. I mean, it gets to the point where, you know, he's so fast and he gets kind of in these awkward positions and he ends up trying to throw some pass that is borderline uncatchable.
The thing with that is that's only going to get better with playing time. That's just one of those things.
I completely agree. I completely agree because that's the thing. You have to let those guys play through things like that, right? Like they don't get better. You know, you can practice all you want, but they have to play through their mistakes to get better. So I agree with you. Russ has looked good scoring the ball. He even showed in the summer league that he can distribute the ball well, which is something that I think was biggest knock on him. Is he more of a 6'1" shooting guard, or can he truly play point guard? You know, can he truly run an offense? And I think he's worked very hard to show you that he truly can run an offense while also providing you that scoring punch. So, but it's obvious that Jaeger and the organization are not ready to trust him even really being a third point guard if they're going out and doing something like this. So, okay, I want to ask you this about Mario. So Jaeger is infatuated with these two point guard lineups. He tried to do it a lot last year when Calathes was there, when Beno was there, when Mike, you know, those three guys. He tried several two point guard lineups and, you know, it was kind of a mixed results. What you get with Mario Chalmers is, I think, a guy who is not really great at being a point guard. Like, he's not really great at running an offense or initiating an offense, but he is a good spot-up shooter, or at least he has been in the past. He was not last season. But that's probably where he's most comfortable and where you're going to be able to use him the most is if you ran a two-point guard with Mario Chalmers and Mike Conley out there, allowing Conley to kind of run the offense and then have Chalmers space the floor as a spot-up shooter. Also, I think Chalmers is probably a defensive upgrade from Beno. He's at least competent on the defensive end, and Beno's just bad. He's really bad as a defender, and Beno is better on ball, right? I mean, he is better when he's able to get a dribble drive going and either pull up from 15 or dish it off or finish at the rim, something like that. I could see it from that aspect that would be something that is attractive to the Grizzlies.
Yeah, you're completely forgetting one part of getting Mario Chalmers is that people don't – I guess they're not considering this when they're thinking about it, is that he's going to get booed at home. He's going to get booed. He's going to be the first person since – like, we thought that Nick Calathes getting booed, I think, was it two seasons ago, was bad. He's going to get – booed every single time he gets the ball. It's going to be bad.
But that's just a small section of the fan base, right?
I don't think it's that small. I think it's bigger than you.
Oh,
realize.
You think majority?
I think it's the majority. I think the people in the minority. Because most people in Memphis care about both basketball teams. And most people who are Grizzlies fans are also got their hearts torn out in 2008. Like, people know who Mario Chalmers is. People don't like Mario Chalmers in Memphis. He gets booed every time he comes here. He gets booed almost as much as LeBron got booed. And on the two-point guard thing, he's not going – he would struggle on offense in a two-point guard lineup with Mike Conley because what they do with the two-point guard lineups, they kind of – with Nick Kolasinac, they were able to do that because Nick Kolasinac is such a great passer that he – Mike Conley was able to float around and then spot up and then
– Right.
Spot up for threes and then go back down and play defense on the shooting guard. Well, it's going to work on defense because Chalmers can play defense on just about any one or two. But on offense, can he play next to Mike Conley when he has the ball? Is he going to work next to Mike Conley? I don't think he would.
Well, here's the thing. Is he did it some to a degree with LeBron. You know, LeBron brought the ball up a lot in Miami while Chalmers was point guard. So he is used to it some, but that's deferring to LeBron as opposed to Mike Conley.
Yeah.
You know, you just deferring to LeBron, that's there's no option in that. You know, you just kind of, all right, LeBron, whatever you need me to do. But I do think that he is somewhat familiar with doing something like that, although I do understand what you're saying. And I'll be honest, in a two-point guard lineup, I like Mike Conley going to the left or right wing and spotting up for three, you know, especially the right wing.
Yep.
I'm a fan of that because that is something that Conley is very good at and doesn't really get the opportunity to do a whole lot. So, you know, I get that Chalmers is not a good player really anymore. He certainly wasn't last year, and nothing this season has suggested that he's going to pick it up. I see, I guess, to some degree, what the Grizzlies are doing. But I think the biggest thing it screams to me is they're not ready for Russ. They're not ready to trust Russ Smith, you know, playing even the third point guard.
Yeah, it drives me insane because I think he and Jordan Adams are ready, and they're just – Jaeger has that thing that Lionel Hollins used to have. That one of the few awful things that Lionel passed on to him was that this weird infatuation with veterans, and that it drives me crazy because like it was the same thing with Tayshaun now that it is with Vince Carter. He should not be playing. He shouldn't be seeing the floor, and the only reason he is because he's been in the league for 15 years.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those things, like against Golden State the other night, it was really frustrating when, you know, the team is, I mean, they're getting their asses kicked, basically, just to put it lightly. And Jaeger wants to go small, so instead of rolling Jordan Adams out there, he throws Vince Carter out there. And Vince Carter, I think his first shot attempt, he had both feet on the three-point line and missed rim, just straight up bricked it off the backboard on a three-point attempt. He can't move, Jonah. Like, he can't move. Vince Carter, it does not look any better than it did last season.
His ankles are done. He can't get his feet set under him when he's taking a jump shot. He's unsure of how much he can run. It looks like he's still kind of limping. He can't move his feet on defense. He can't do the things they want him to do. And so I don't see the point in playing him because he's a liability on offense. He can't space the floor. And he can't drive to the basket. I guess the best thing he can do at this point on offense is set screens, and even then he's not, you know, they don't use him that way very much. And then on defense, he's just standing around. He can't close out because, I mean, his feet are just not where they used to be. And I guess, it's sad because I love Vince Carter and I hate talking about him like this because he's been so great in the past. But, I mean, I think it's time for him to hang it up and he'd be a great coach. He'd be great in the booth. I mean, we've seen it before, or we've heard him before. I mean, it's not like he's going to be hurting after he's done with basketball.
Oh, sure, yeah. Like, he's going to make decent living next season, either coaching basketball or being a broadcaster for somebody. I would love for him to some way, you know, wedge his way onto the Grizzlies broadcast because he's been terrific. It's been fun to listen to the guy. You know, when he was hurt last season, he would jump on with Brevin and Pete, and it was good. I mean, Vince is really, really good. And then as a coach, I mean, that guy's going to get a player development job if he wants it and then work his way into an assistant coaching role. That's easily going to happen because he's just a good dude. You know, he's just a good guy who cares about helping young guys.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done. Like, he as a basketball player, it's done. Like, that experiment is over. And that is something with Jaeger that has frustrated me, is that he's a guy that would rather be late pulling the plug on an experiment than early pulling the plug on an experiment. He usually is late, right? Like it, the Jeff Green starting thing, there was no reason for Jeff to start. Like nothing suggested to you that that was a good idea. Your eyes told you it was bad. The numbers told you it was bad. Everything told you it was bad. And he tried it all preseason, and it didn't look good. And then he rolled him out there game one. And listen, I'm not silly enough to blame a 30-point loss on a single player because that's ludicrous. But yeah. it sure didn't help, right? Like it did not
no.
help that Jeff Green was out there starting. So
yeah, why not?
That's the thing with Jaeger.
The same thing with the lineup he was throwing out there last night. He threw Zeebo at center and then Jeff Green at power forward when I think the Grizzlies
right.
were down 11. And then, like, all of a sudden they were down 20, and he's still rolling with the same lineups. It's just with Jeff Green. Jeff Green cannot play power forward next to Zach Randolph. It's not going to work. It hasn't worked in the past. He's a slow learner, and it's very frustrating.
It is. It's very frustrating. I was a proponent of Jaeger. I was a guy that thought that, you know, he would be a nice change of pace from Lionel Hollins, but you find yourself being frustrated with a lot of things that you are frustrated with Lionel, now with Jaeger. The young guys, the lineups, I think he's done better. He's certainly improved the offense. At times his rotations look good, but I think for the majority of the time his rotations have not been very good. So that's a frustrating thing that was frustrating with Lionel and Jaeger. And the young guys, you know, like I said, the young guys, just basically the blatant disregard to develop young guys at all. Like, not even make an attempt at it. You know, if they're up 30 or down 30, he'll throw them out there for 5 or 6 minutes. But that's not developing young guys. They have to play meaningful minutes at some point. And neither Lionel nor Dave Jaeger really did that. And listen, like, it's totally possible that Russ Smith and Jordan Adams just suck. Like, they are not NBA players. That is a total possibility. But it's also a possibility that both of them are good rotation players on an NBA team. I think that's the more likely scenario because we've seen bits and pieces, and from those bits and pieces, Jordan has looked good, Russ has looked good, but, like, for whatever reason, Dave will not throw him out there.
You mentioned the Jaeger's offense, which a lot of the same offense from when Lionel was here is still there. That's what part of the problem has been this season is that he's tried to install, it's twice now, 2013 and now, he's tried to install his own version of his free-flowing offense, and it just doesn't, this isn't his fault. I mean, they want him to fix the offense, but they don't have the personnel for it. I mean, they can't create, they don't have the spacing to move the ball like they want to and shoot the threes and do what Dave wants to do on offense. So he's had to go back and find little ways to improve the old offense, like out of after timeout plays are a trillion times better than they used to be. And they look much better in the games most of the time. I can think of a couple.
Like they understand
where,
what a 2-for-1 is at the end of quarters.
Yeah,
you know, like that was something that didn't happen with Lionel. Right.
Yeah. So
and by the way, if I ever get to talking a lot, you can just interrupt me. Like
I just do that.
I just start talking. And just feel free to butt in, dude. I do not care. I realize that I rant sometimes, but go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
No, he found the little ways to fix the offense that I don't think Lionel will ever figure out because, I mean, you watched Brooklyn the other night. They're doing the same kind of stuff. I mean, they're dumping it into the post to Brook Lopez and standing around watching them. It's the same thing I've seen a million times with Zach Randolph. They're letting Jared Jack handle the ball like he's Rudy Gay.
Right.
So Jaeger has done a lot. He's done a ton. It's just those little, I think every team has this thing with a coach. I mean, it's those little small areas where he needs to improve that he'll get better. I mean, he's young. He'll get better eventually. It's just this team doesn't have time, I guess, to have him figure it out.
I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
Okay, they're in win-now mode. They've been in win-now mode for 6 years now. They don't really have the time, the luxury for, I guess, him to figure out how to integrate these young players, how to do all these other things. But, I think he's going to figure it out eventually, and I'd rather him do it with the Grizzlies than with another team.
Right, I agree with you. And I think that Jaeger has he's a smart guy. Like he's a sharp guy, I think. He obviously has things that kind of tick people off and the little things that probably every NBA coach, nobody's perfect. But I think the thing with Jaeger is he has these big ideas for the offense. Like he just seems like he's being handcuffed by the roster. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, the honestly, the offense is not all that different from what it was when Lionel was here. There, it is different. It's a little bit more free-flowing. It's not basically just dump it into Zach and let him post up.
Yeah.
The occasional high-low with Mark. It is a little bit more free-flowing, a little bit more pick-and-roll oriented, a little bit. But I think that Jaeger is basically handcuffed by the roster on what he can do on offense. And I think it would be a mistake if, you know, this season starts to go sideways and the Grizzlies win, you know, 40, 45 games, something like that, or if they even start out, you know, there's a possibility they could start out with a losing record through the first 10, 15, maybe even 20 games. It's a tough schedule right off the bat. So I think it would be a mistake to make a knee-jerk reaction and cut Jaeger loose, because it feels like this next summer, 2016, big changes are coming to this roster. It has to, right? I mean, I don't know that the four of Tony, Mike, Mark, Zach can just – I don't know they can carry you anymore.
Of the two – of the, there should be three definites on this team for next season, and that's Jaeger, Mark, and Mike. Everybody else should be up for grabs, up for whatever. They need to improve. They need to change. It's not that they need to – I wrote this last night. It's not that they have to – abandon what they do. It's just that they have to kind of improve. It's not the change in pace. You got to play fast. You got to shoot a bunch of threes. It's that you have to be able to score the ball in today's
right.
NBA. You can't go 6 or 7 minutes without scoring and still win a basketball game, because offenses are too good. You've got Steph Curry who can hit threes from half court, or you've got LeBron James and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving who can score in 19 different ways each. And it's just, it doesn't work anymore. They've kind of been figured out. This core, it's been together for 6 years. It's kind of what happened to the Detroit Pistons in the early 2000s. They were together for 6 years, and then they just, people figured it out. I mean, you can pick and roll the Grizzlies in a certain way, and you're going to score almost every time, because Zach Randolph just isn't, he can't move like he used to. Or you get a rebound off the Grizzlies, and you play transition a certain way, you're going to score a bunch of points. I mean, that's just, it's kind of what the Warriors did last night. They kept losing Steph Curry in transition. How you lose Steph Curry in transition, there should be somebody like on him at every moment of the game, but it's just something that's happened for the last 4 years, and it's just getting worse and worse.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, just Zach and Tony, they're getting old. I think the league has figured it out to a degree. I mean, listen, the Warriors, they just don't guard Tony Allen. Like, it's that simple. If he catches the ball from 12 feet and out, they're going to give him 3 or 4 feet of space. And if he's off the ball, they're not going to guard him. They're going to let him shoot. And a couple of times, Tony stepped into a couple of three-pointers. He airballed one of them and just grazed rim on the other, and that's exactly what Luke Walton wanted the Memphis Grizzlies to do last night. I know specifically one time Mark Gasol, he passed open a relatively open 17-foot look, which is, you know, right at the top of the key. It's money for him, and he swung it to a wide open Tony Allen in the corner, and Tony bricked the three. And that's exactly what, you know, whether it's Steve Kerr or Luke Walton, whoever is orchestrating that team, that's what they want. Like, that's what they want the Grizzlies to do. And they played right into that last night. And, you know, in terms of the Warriors game, it's just, if you have an off night against that team, they will run off. And they will run off in a heartbeat. And, listen, the first quarter, the Grizzlies were up by one at the end of it. But it didn't feel good. You know, Steph Curry was missing looks that he makes, you know, 9 times out of 10. The Grizzlies were struggling to score the basketball. It did not feel okay, and then the Warriors just totally ran off on them in the second and third quarter. I think they outscored them by nearly 50 points in those two quarters alone. So
yeah.
that I mean, listen, it was bad, and I think the Warriors, first of all, they're better than the Grizzlies. Their roster is just better, and they're a bad matchup, quite frankly, for the Grizzlies. And, you know, again, if you have a bad night, they're going to run off on you. You know, it's just that simple.
Yeah. That was the worst Grizzly game I've ever seen in my life. That's not a joke. That's not an exaggeration. That's the worst game I've ever seen. I've seen them win like 20 games and never be beaten by 50 points. They look they look like they didn't want to be there after the first quarter. Marc Gasol looked as frustrated as I've ever seen him. I mean, he's passing up open looks, but guys aren't hitting shots. Courtney Lee was 2 for 11. Mike was 2 for 8. Tony Allen was 0 for 6. I mean, Zach Randolph got into the post, and they're just ignoring everybody on the perimeter, not just Tony Allen. They were ignoring Mike Conley. They were ignoring Courtney Lee and just swarming him. He had 4 or 5 people around him at all times. I mean, it's a bad matchup. And when you add in the fact that they weren't playing well to begin with, it just makes it 10 times worse. And
right.
I figured they were going to lose. I had them losing by 29. Did not see them losing by 50. I figured – I definitely figured it would be – I don't know. I figured they'd compete for at least the second quarter and not just score 12 points.
Yeah, I don't think anybody saw that coming. It was – literally, by definition, the worst loss in Grizzlies history. They have never lost a game by 50 points, and they have put some horrible basketball teams out on the court, like horrible basketball teams that played against, like, Kobe and Shaq Laker teams, you know, and that's the worst loss. You know, it's weird that, I mean, 50 points, I don't want to harp on this. I frankly want to move on because it's really not worth spending any time on, but that's a lot to lose a basketball game by, you know, like, 50 points.
I
20 in the NBA is a ton.
Yeah, I've played on some horrible, I'm talking about horrible church league teams, or not even church league teams. I played in the AAU league for a year against Memphis kids.
Right.
Against kids that were going off to college and stuff. I had no business in that league. Zero. Never lost a game by 50 points.
Right.
Not once. I mean,
I remember
our tallest kid was like 5'7" against 6'3" kids, and
Right.
I'm not losing a game by 50 points. It's apples and oranges, kind of, because it's completely different, I guess, but never in my life have I lost anything by 50 points.
Oh, I totally have, because, so, I think, I probably have told you this story before, but I don't know, I haven't shared it on the podcast yet. So, I was playing AAU, and my team, we were garbage. We were terrible. And we were playing against the Memphis Magic, and that was like I remember Tarik Black was on there. I think Chris Crawford, Joe Jackson, and maybe even Adonis Thomas, too. It was an insane AAU team that I think finished in the top three, like at the AAU National Championships or whatever. We played against them, and I was the tallest, biggest guy that we had, so I was forced to guard Tarik Black. And Tarik caught it in the post, one power dribbles, backed me under the rim, just turned around and two-hand jammed it. I fell on my back. He did, like, you know, the Shaq, pull your knees up to your chest. It was nasty. But we lost that game by, I think, 82 points. I think the final was, like, 42-124 or something like that. So, listen, I can sympathize with the Grizzlies. It gets worse. It gets worse than 50. But, yeah, that's like it's like a bunch of little kids running around playing AAU ball against grown men. Listen, I can sympathize a little bit, but – professional, like, you won't see too many 50-point losses in the NBA this season. All right, we're spending way too much time on the Grizzlies losing by 50. Two more Grizzly things, then we'll move on to some other stuff. First one we've touched on a little bit, Zach Randolph. I am very concerned about Zach Randolph for a couple of different reasons. One, he just looks like he's starting to get old. Like, he's not moving as well. He's never been like a spry guy. You know, he's never been light on his feet or whatever, but he really looks like he's lumbering. And I think that brings me to the second point, is he's having to chase around these stretch fours that they wear him out. You know, he's not a young guy anymore. like Kevin Love, he had to chase him all around the floor. And Kevin Love, you know, they basically ate his lunch. He was getting open looks all night long and had a terrific ball game. So I think that brings the question is, can the Grizzlies put Zach Randolph on the floor and him be a net positive? Like, can his offensive production be good enough to where when he's playing, having to chase around these stretch fours, like, can he still be productive? Like, is that still a net positive for the Grizzlies? Because, listen, Zach Randolph has basically single-handedly won playoff series for the Grizzlies before, and that's not the case anymore. That's not going to happen. It's just the way the NBA is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that's a huge question the Grizzlies have to answer.
Yeah, no, it's the question the Grizzlies have to answer. I mean, it's the only one. I mean, I think you're going to start hearing Zach Randolph trade rumors here in a couple weeks if he doesn't, like, he just doesn't have it. It's not that he doesn't have any more. It's that he's kind of where David Lee was a couple years ago with the Warriors, except he's gotten, he's different than David Lee. He's just slower, but he's not, I don't know how to describe this. He's just,
He's a better player than David Lee is.
Yeah, no, he's better. It's just, he's in that kind of same situation where the team doesn't really fit around him anymore. I mean, and they're kind of
right.
Going to need to move away from him to get better
right.
as a team. I mean, that's the way it's going to have to be. The NBA is moving away from what Zach Randolph is at that position. If he wants to continue to play better, the Grizzlies are going to have to start finding him good matchups to play him in. That's what they're going to have to do. They can't, like, he's not going to be able to play against the Spurs. If the Grizzlies want to beat the Spurs, he can't play. That's a sad fact. It's the same thing with the Warriors. It's the same thing with the Cavs. He's not the type of player that can take over a game physically anymore. But then also on the other side of the ball, he can't chase around LaMarcus Aldridge. Maybe he can for a little bit, but then that offense is so high powered with Greg Popovich in charge of it that it's just going to be pointless for him. And the Spurs already guard him so well that Kawhi Leonard is going to be guarding him or double-teaming him with LaMarcus Aldridge, and that's pretty much pointless. I can't think of a single matchup right now off the top of my head where I want Zach Randolph starting, which is sad because I think part of it right now is he's not in shape. I don't think his knee's right, and another part of it is guys have figured it out. You double-team him at this point in his career, and he's going to struggle.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think that the whole conditioning thing, working his way back into shape, is a part of it. I do think that is a part of it, and that's something. That's why I'm going to withhold judgment, I guess, for probably 15 to 20 games, and then you kind of reevaluate over the next five or so. You know, you look basically
yeah.
through games, 15 to 25 or 30, and if it's not getting better or if it's getting worse, that's when you really need to take a hard look and say, do we have a fundamental issue with our starting five with Zach Randolph being in it? Because I don't think he's worth trading because I'm not sure what you'd get back. I'm not sure what kind of value you would get back for him. But you're going to have to do something. And whether that means bringing Zach off the bench to where he's an 18 to 20-minute a game guy or what, I'm not sure what that is. But, you know, the solution with the starters now is, Marc Gasol can run around with stretch fours a little bit better than Zach can, but what you're doing then is taking one of the best rim protectors and best down low defenders or just defenders, period, in the NBA and making him chase guys around the perimeter.
Yeah.
And you're taking
and
Zach Randolph, who gives you zero rim protection, and making him your rim protector, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah. They'll have to figure out special ways to use them, like – in small ball lineups where he can take advantage of a center, maybe playing next to Jeff Green, which I just harp on how bad that was, but maybe not Jeff Green, maybe Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes is probably the guy there because he can actually kind of maybe shoot threes.
Well, Brandon Wright and Jermichael Green, I think, could chase around stretch fours if you
want
to play back to five.
I don't know if you want Brandon Wright doing that. I think
maybe
Jermichael
not Wright,
Green,
but definitely Jermichael
guy.
Green. Yeah,
Michael Green, that's a better idea than Matt Barnes, probably. That's what they're going to have to do if he wants to be productive, because right now it's just not working out for him, and it hasn't worked out for him in the last season and a half when he's played these guys, and these guys are becoming more and more relevant as the NBA season goes on. I mean, who do they play tonight? They play the Kings.
Right.
He's going to have to chase around when they go small. He'll have to chase somebody around, or he'll have to chase Omri Caspi around. And
or Rudy Gay. Rudy could play a little
Rudy
more.
Gay, yeah, exactly. So it's just not a good idea to start him
right
at this point. I don't think, but I know everybody else is going to disagree with me.
Well, listen, we'll record another podcast at about game 25 or 30, and we'll see what it looks like then. I mean, listen, a lot of things can change between now and then, but I think that's when you start to get a grasp of what your team is going to be like. You know, not definitively, but you start to understand the sample size becomes a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And listen, maybe all this stuff works itself out. That's entirely possible. But these issues, they are real. They are real right now. And it's something that the Grizzlies are going to have to deal with. Last Grizzly thing that I want to touch on. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about Jeff Green. And I don't know that he's worth all that time. But I do want to say that I have been encouraged at points this season about Jeff Green being a useful player for the Grizzlies. We've already talked about it's very evident he does not need to start. That experiment needs to be thrown away and never, ever revisited. That's very evident. But him coming off the bench is interesting, and he's had a couple of good games, now, albeit against really bad teams in the Pacers and the Nets, or one decent team, I guess, in the Pacers and a really bad team in the Nets. But he looks decent. He was a net positive in those two basketball games in terms of the production that he gave you. He gives you some interesting lineup flexibility. You can play him at three or four. You know, we can debate whether that's good playing him at four, but you can do it. He certainly has the size to do it. He can chase around the stretch four. I don't know. I like him with the bench, kind of. I'll be honest. He does some things that are like, yeah, okay, I could get on board with him doing that. Like, he's taken and made some pretty big threes when the Grizzlies have made it.
Yep.
I wouldn't bank on that continuing. He's proven that he can do that. I don't mind him as a ball handler in certain situations, like in pick-and-roll situations, maybe with Brandon Wright as a 4-5 or even 3-4 pick-and-roll. I think that's interesting because it might get you some good switching matchups. I think that when he's engaged on defense, he's at least confident. Good God, against the Cavaliers, he was awful on defense.
He was awful.
There were three or four times.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Oh, he had a really bad game against the Warriors all around. It was a quintessential terrible Jeff Green game. So was Cleveland, to be honest. He lost LeBron three or four times. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, man, LeBron James, that's no help. Like, you don't even consider leaving him for a second. Try to make it hard for him to catch the ball. You know, put your nose on his nose and never, ever move. Or leave that position, right? Like, you don't lose LeBron James. If there's one guy in the NBA you don't lose, it's him. So I'm kind of rambling here. But what I'm trying to say basically is I think there are ways that Jeff Green can be useful for the Grizzlies, and I think Jaeger is starting to figure a few of those ways out.
People talked about before the season that Jeff Green is going to the training camp is good for Jeff Green. It's that Jeff Green
right.
is going to improve. Jeff Green's the same. The training camp didn't do much to change him as a player because he's 30 years old. You're not going to change the way you've been playing basketball for 30 years in one little bitty training camp. But what it has done is that with the training camp and all this extra practice time it's done is it's given the Grizzlies ways to figure out how to use him better than they were last year. Getting him the ball on the move towards the rim they did it last night against the Warriors. He just wasn't finishing. Giving him less time to think when he has the ball is huge because he doesn't make good decisions. He's going to pull up for jumpers
right.
that he doesn't need to take. He has Rudy Gay syndrome and that mindset that he shouldn't have. But it's huge getting him because he's so athletic. When he's moving towards the basket, he can dunk. He can get near the rim. Getting him spot-up opportunities near the corners, on the wings. That's what they've done, and it's worked so far, except for the two games. And he's looked better than he did last season, but that wasn't very difficult.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing is you've got to, I like what you said there. You've got to give him opportunities within the offense where it's do this or do this and don't freelance. That's when Jeff gets in trouble, when he starts freelancing on offense. That's where he takes the pull-up 15-footer that clangs off the back iron, or he dribbles too much and turns it over. That's when he gets himself in a lot of trouble, is when he starts to do things on his own. So if you give him opportunities within offense where, hey, be a pick and roll guy, you know you've got a shooter, you know you've got an opposite 3-point line shooter, you've got Brandon Wright as your roll man, or you've got a clear path to the basket, make one of those three decisions. But if you pull up for that 15-footer, I will yank you out of this game. Like that, I just think you have to clearly define what Jeff Green is supposed to do, and he can do some decent things for you.
Yeah, he's not going to be that guy that can guard LeBron, though. He's not going to be
No.
even close to your best wing defender. I mean, they have three guys on the wing that I want defending LeBron before I want Jeff Green within 20 feet of him. You've got Courtney
Right.
Lee, Tony Allen, and Matt Barnes.
Right.
So kind of expecting too much of him has been a problem. I think that I even did that. Well, I admit to him, I expected too much, and I've been kind of killing him for the longest time. But just because I expected too much. But as they start to use him better, as they start to figure him out, and as he starts to figure things out a little bit better, he's looked, and it's ended up well. It's just these two games where the Grizzlies as a whole look bad. He's also looked bad. So I doubt he stays a Grizzly after this season, but I think he's going to be okay for the season, which is better than I had, better things than I had to say about a month ago. So
Right.
there's that.
Right. You think he can be useful. You know, like there are ways I think they can make him useful. And it's just all about, I just think that if you clearly define, like, Jeff, here are the things you're supposed to do. Don't do anything outside of this. He can be effective. Now, that's hard because, listen, I'm pretty confident that you and I aren't the first two people to have this discussion. And I know you said, you know, you had higher expectations for him. I promise you, you're not the first person that had thought that. I think a
Yeah.
lot of people with the Grizzlies, a lot of people with the Celtics, a lot of people with the Thunder all had higher expectations because he looks the part. I mean, he's 6'9", 235. It just looks like all you have to do is teach the guy how to dribble and shoot a little bit. I mean, he's going to be unreal. He looks like LeBron James. I mean, physically, he's everything you want in a basketball player. But he's Jeff Green, you know, like he just is what he is. And you just kind of got to live with it. You understand he's going to make mistakes, but if you can kind of harness it in just enough, he can be a useful basketball player for this team. So any final comments you want to make about the Grizzlies?
No, I think I'm talked out on the Grizzlies. It's been a long 2 days.
It has been a long 2 days. All right, so you and I, this off season, we pretty much handled the majority of the draft coverage for the Memphis Grizzlies. I know Andrew Ford did some, Joe Mullinex did some, several different people contributed, but I know you and I, we worked together on several different things, mock drafts and scouting reports and things like that. So this rookie class has been awesome. And I realize that we're like 5 games into the season, but they have been really, really good. Like, Kristaps Porzingis has looked really good. Karl Towns has looked really good. Jahlil Okafor has looked really good. I mean, you could go on. Basically, if you say anybody 1 through 14 or so, they've looked good at certain points. Emmanuel Mudiay has looked really good. You know, you worry about the turnovers, but he's a rookie. You know, he'll fix that. So are you surprised at how good this rookie class has looked?
Yes, actually, especially Porzingis. Porzingis and Towns were. I thought Towns would be this good this season. I just thought it would be later. I didn't think he'd come out looking like, oh man, this guy's going to be the next Anthony Davis. David Thorpe just called said he has on Twitter just said he had a higher ceiling than Anthony Davis, which is crazy to
Wow.
me. I don't really agree with. Yeah, I don't agree with that, but that's
Thorpe
how well he
says
played.
some crazy things sometimes.
Yeah, I don't agree with it, but so I mean, Towns has looked great, but I think really the shocker has got to be Porzingis, doesn't it? Because I mean, man, he's made that Knicks team watchable. They're not.
No, that's so weird because, like, this Knicks team is, like, you can kind of get behind rooting for them. Like, they're kind of fun. You know?
Yeah. Like, they got Vucevic over there in the corner, like, bombing threes. Melo's doing his Melo thing. Porzingis is around blocking shots, getting rebounds, dunking on Marcus Aldridge. It's fun. They're fun to watch because of Porzingis. And I don't – my biggest disappointment, though, has been D'Angelo Russell. It's just – it's killing me. It's killing me because I thought he was going to be killing it out. I didn't think he'd be killing it out of the gate. But the Kobe thing is just – it's not good. I mean, it's bringing him down. It's bringing that whole team down. And, like, I can't even watch him because I watched – I think D'Angelo Russell hit two threes the other night and had a couple good plays in a row. And then it's immediately – he gets taken out immediately by Byron Scott because Byron Scott hates threes and he's freaking insane. And puts Kobe right back in, and it's the Kobe 17-footer off the rim show. It's killing me.
Yeah, Byron Scott is kind of like – I feel like he's kind of like the Jim Caldwell of the NBA. You know, like Jim Caldwell was so terrible with the Colts. Like, is anybody shocked that he's about to get fired with the Lions? Like, how surprising is that Jim Caldwell sucks with the Detroit Lions? Right?
Yeah,
so Byron Scott, it's like when he got hired, first of all, it's not a great situation for him, but like, is anybody shocked that Byron Scott is a terrible basketball coach? Like, I don't get it, you know?
No.
I just don't understand. Yeah.
The only time he's ever succeeded as a basketball coach is when Chris Paul was his point guard and at the beginning of Chris Paul's career when he was, like, out of his mind good with David West and Mecca Okafor or Tyson Chandler, depending on which years you're looking at. But, yeah, I mean, we have no evidence of him being a good basketball coach. And it's beginning to drive me insane.
It's crazy how these guys, like, the NBA used to be so bad about, like, retreading coaches. You know, it was just, like, the same 40 guys got every single NBA coaching job, and they just passed them around. They're starting to get better. They're starting to get guys from college. They're starting to get young assistants. You don't see, like, Jeff Van Gundy getting 14 jobs, or I guess they still do it, right? Because, like, Stan Van Gundy gets jobs and George Karl gets jobs. And they're good. I'm not hating. I'm just saying there is some retread going on. But it was, like, for so long, it was, like, these guys that were bad at coaching basketball just kept getting these jobs. And we're getting better. The NBA is improving. But, man, like, Byron Scott, nobody should be shocked that he hasn't been good. He's the Jim Caldwell of the NBA, so that's what he is to me now.
Yeah,
and they've got the same, like, bald head, perplexed look all the time. So that's who they are. But, okay, so D'Angelo Russell. I would always toot the horn of Moutier is better than Russell, but I thought Russell was going to be good, and I still do. Like, listen. We're sitting here talking about, like, game 4 or 5 of a rookie's career, most likely, a double-digit year career. I still think D'Angelo Russell's going to be just fine, but I would also still take Emmanuel Mudiay over D'Angelo Russell. And, I beat the drum of Jahlil Okafor over Karl Towns. I think Karl Towns is awesome. I think Jahlil Okafor is awesome. And if you gave me either one, I'd be ecstatic.
It's a win-win situation.
Absolutely. And I think, to be fair, Towns probably fits better into the whole, switch everything NBA of having to guard stretch guys and having to come out and guard, point guards and pick and roll situations when you're switching or hedge out. He does that better than Jahlil Okafor does. I just think Okafor, when that guy's conditioning gets to where he can play 30, 35 minutes a game, I think he's a 22 to 25 game scorer for the rest of his career.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, you're happy with either one. The Knicks thing's been kind of weird. They've taken, like, the weird turn of, like, kind of fun to watch. Kind of, like, they got some cool young guys. Carmelo's back. Sasha Vujacic randomly is back in the NBA. They're kind of fun. Like, Langston Galloway is probably an NBA player now.
Jerry
it's Green weird.
Like, the old Hawks.
Oh, I love Jerry and Grant. I can't get enough Jerry and Grant. Man, this draft was fun. I liked a lot of these guys in this draft. Like, I would have killed to get Jerry and Grant on the Grizzlies. Man, this is a fun draft.
Yeah, I thought I was being optimistic when I thought they were going to be – I thought this was a great draft. I thought it was great. People were kind of down on it for some reason. But, I mean, I thought it was going to be really good. It's better than this upcoming draft for sure.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's like the top seven of this next draft is kind of fun, but it I don't know. There's just not a whole lot of guys that are exciting, you know. And we haven't started the college basketball season, so yeah, it does. It drops off significantly after about the top six or seven. But I'm a total nerd. I love the NBA draft. I can't get enough of it. I know. We'll definitely. I don't know. We might have to like link up and do a pre-college basketball season. I don't know. There's not really enough time to do a pre-college basketball season.
I've already got half of one. We'll talk about that off air because we're going to do that now.
All right. We'll work something out then. I'm always down. So, all right, let's do this. Let's do our picks against the spread. Go ahead and give me yours. Go ahead and give me yours and tell me why you got them.
For Wednesday
these are for Wednesday night,
night
by the way. Yes, these are Wednesday night.
Yeah. Cleveland and New York are playing on Wednesday night. And the line right now is New York plus 9.5. I like New York. They've got their sneaky fun. I think they're going to sneak up on, and you know how Melo plays against LeBron. I think that game's going to be close. I'm taking it. I already took it. It's a good bet in my mind. Melo's going to go up for like 20 points. Kristaps is going to be everywhere blocking people. There's also the chance that New York gets blown out by 35, but I'm trying not to think about it. I'm going positive. I'm saying it's going to be close. And then what was my other one?
I think there is a possibility that the Knicks, I don't want to say this and totally overreact like five games, but or whatever, they play three or four. I think there's a possibility they could backdoor their way into, like, the eighth seed of the playoffs.
And then they're going to be, like, the scrappy eighth seed that takes you to seven games. Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
It could happen. I don't want to totally – but it could happen. So getting 9.5 points with Carmelo, he could shoot out with LeBron. I mean, that's the thing. It's like Melo, for as much as I am not a huge fan of him, the guy can score, and the guy can do it whenever he wants to, and he's looked good this season. And, my guy Langston Galloway, I could see it. I almost took that game. I will say that was in contention. I didn't have enough faith in the Knicks because they're still the Knicks, but I don't mind.
Yeah. And what people don't realize is that LeBron's not where he was defensively like 2 or 3 years ago. So Melo and him are just going to go back and forth with each other, and it's going to be so much fun. That's a league password game. I'm going to be cranking it up tomorrow night. I'm kind of pumped for it.
All right, second one.
My second one is Orlando. Orlando's playing Houston. Houston's favored by 9 points. I'm taking Orlando plus 9 because I do not trust anything to do with the Rockets right now, and I love this Orlando team. I'm not thinking Orlando may not win, but they've been in a ton of close games early. Aaron Gordon looks fun. I love Aaron Gordon so much. And then Oladipo is being awesome. Elfrid Payton is looking good. Their whole team looks good. Tobias Harris. Scott Skiles is playing Mario Hezonja, which – I can't even tell you how happy I am to see that. They're fun. Houston is the opposite of fun right now. I would almost take them to win the game.
Okay, so you get Orlando on the second night of a back-to-back. That's the one hesitation I have. And
they're young.
I want to talk – what's that? Oh, yeah, they're young.
They're young.
Yeah,
they'll be fine.
Sure, yeah. So – I think Vegas, if you look close enough and you follow something specifically close enough, you can catch numbers that are good. Like, you can really catch good numbers. You could do that with the Vols in college football. So, the Vols, you caught really good numbers against Georgia, against Alabama, and against Kentucky. because they were a lot better than their record suggested, and you got really good numbers. I think that's done now. I think Vegas realizes, odds makers realize, the balls are good. We're not going to give them points, or you know, we're going to make sure that these spreads reflect a good football team. I think they're a 16-point favorite against South Carolina. That's indicative of a good football team. I think the same thing happened with the Rockets. Like, they fell off so hard to begin their season that last night I got the Rockets plus 5 at home against the Thunder, and they won the game straight up. So I took the Rockets plus 5. I think the same thing is happening with the Pelicans too. They've gotten off to a rough start, and, you know, they're 0-3. They're banged up big time. But listen, they've got Anthony Davis, and that was the hype train coming in. Anthony Davis was going to make that jump into the, you know, LeBron Durant stardom. And so I think Vegas was – they're in on Anthony Davis, and they're giving the Pelicans a lot of respect when they don't deserve it, because it's not Anthony Davis's fault. It's the fact that his team is incredibly banged up. So I think tonight you're getting Orlando plus 5 at the Pelicans. I'm all over it. I know I've got 2 for Wednesday, but I am all over that. I feel like this is one of those where Vegas is messed up. They gave me too many, and I like it way too much. So I like that. And the Rockets, we'll see. I think we'll see. We'll see what they do on Wednesday, because it's easy for Harden to get up against OKC, but we'll see if they're really back. So the 2 that I picked, I didn't love either one of these, to be honest. Portland, I took them plus 6 at Utah. Utah does not have a competent point guard. Listen, I think Portland's not very good, but I think that Damian Lillard could score 65 against whoever tries to guard him from Utah and keep it within 6. I think 6 is a big number. If it was 3, I'd stay away. But 6 feels like a big number to me. That's 2 possessions I'm getting against the Utah team. Listen, I don't love it. I really don't. I don't love it. I do love this next one, though. Boston minus 2.5 at Indy. Indy is on the second night of a back-to-back. I wonder how good Indy is, and I think Boston's pretty good. Like, I think they are securely a playoff team in the East, and I think they're going to take it to Indy. Like, I love getting teams that are on the second night of a back-to-back. I don't know what to think of that Indy team, right? I don't think they're very good. Yeah,
I saw that one, and I really considered it. But the one thing that kind of scares me is that Paul George. Who's guarding Paul George? Because if he's playing power forward, that means, like, Jared Sullinger or Kelly Olynyk is going to be guarding him, and he's going to destroy them. He's going to take it to them. And, oh, man, I don't know.
Jay Crowder, baby.
Jay Crowder, okay. I'll give you – Jay Crowder's good. I don't know. I still think Paul George is going to take it to him. I think he's going to have, like, 25, 30 points. And they could win that
Marcus
game.
Marcus Smart's pouring in 40 on George Hill.
You're being a little bit more optimistic about them than I am.
Listen, I just gave Marcus Smart a 40-point game and Damian Lillard a 65-point game, so – that's how I justify these bets. We understand. Like I think anybody that listens to this podcast and hears me do the picks with Kevin on football, I've actually done well. I've got a winning record. I think I'm 4 or 5 games above 500, which is turning a profit, which I'm happy with. And I've actually done really well on the NBA. I feel really good about how I've done so far. I think I've put money on 7 games and I'm 5-2. And I only did 2 tonight. I took Chicago minus 5 against the Hornets, and then Orlando plus 5 at the Pelicans. And we'll see. We'll see about those 2.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies, I stay away.
Yeah. Oh, I'm staying away from the Grizzlies for a while. But if you follow the NBA for long enough, like if you keep close tabs, like we watch league basketball every night. We watch multiple games every night. If you keep close tabs like this, I mean, you can find the games that are good bets, and you see trends, and you see these things like we both do, and it's kind of getting easier as I get older to make money off of gambling in basketball, really. I'm terrible at gambling on football. terrible at it. I don't know why.
It's hard. NFL is impossible. NFL is really, really hard. College is really weird. But I do better. Like, okay, I take that back. So I have serious biases, I guess, in college football, and that gets me in trouble a lot. And the NFL had a surprisingly good year. I've actually had a better year in the NFL than I have. But so I read a book on sports gambling, and basically what it said was the NFL, basically Vegas lets the market suggest what the line is going to be. So if a ton of money is pouring in on one side, you know, they'll adjust the line accordingly.
Yeah.
So there's so much money being bet on the NFL. Like, it is the number one thing that people bet on, that those lines are almost to the point where half of the time, it's basically 50-50, right? Like, 50% of the underdogs cover, 50% of the favorites cover. Like, it is almost impossible. And if you're betting at a 50% rate, you're losing money, right? If you're winning at a 50% rate, excuse me, you're losing money, because you're only getting back 90% of what you bet. So it's hard. Like football is hard. And I don't think that many people bet on the NBA, so you can find pretty decent lines. And I feel like if you were to, like, just study AAC basketball, like, you could rake off of AAC. Like, because nobody bets on AAC basketball. You could rake off of that. All right, so really quickly, this podcast has run way longer than I expect. I want to talk some Tigers, and that's been a ton of time, but I do want to talk some Tigers. You've got a gig at 24/7 Sports. Tell me about it.
I joined week before the Ole Miss game. I joined 24/7, replacing Grant Milner. Happy about it. I'm having tons of fun. It's a lot more than I'm covering recruiting for the first time. But I'm excited. It's fun. I'm going to be covering basketball soon. I think this Friday is their first game against Des Moines Owen. And then Saturday they play Navy at 6, so I'll be there for that. But I really like it. I mean, it's what I've wanted to do for a long time, and I'm finally getting to do it.
So football before basketball. Paxton, Fuente, you seem to think that there is a decent chance that both will be back next season.
I think Paxton for sure will be back. Fuente is different because, like, there's so many dominoes that are going to fall this offseason. Like, if Texas, Oklahoma, or Texas A&M open up, be worried that he's going to be gone. Like, definitely worried. But, like, USC, I'm not worried about. Miami, he doesn't fit at Miami. I don't think that's the place he would like. South Carolina, that's not even the best job that could be open in the SEC. Georgia could open up, and I don't see him taking either one, but, you know. Then Virginia Tech. People were talking about Virginia Tech, and I want to kind of talk to you about this because I want to get your take on it.
Yes.
I think that's a trap job. I don't think it's a good job at all. I would avoid it like the plague. I mean, you're not going to be able to recruit as well as you can here. When was the last time they were decent? Like, I can't even tell you who their coach is now or who it was. The ACC is not as good as the conference the Tigers in now or the conference the Tigers will be in 3 to 4 years. I just don't think it's smart to rebuild at Virginia Tech when you're going to have to leave Virginia Tech in like 3 years. So I think he'd much rather stay winning at Memphis than bounce somewhere like Virginia Tech and then rebuild for another 2 years and then bounce somewhere else. That just doesn't seem like something he's interested in when he talks. Like, he's proud of what he's done at Memphis. He's very proud of it, and he just put so much work in, and he should be proud. I mean, he's completely turned a whole entire program around. It's just, I just don't see him leaving this year. Maybe after Paxton leaves, it'll be different, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't. I agree with you on the Virginia Tech thing. It feels like that job, people have a higher opinion of it because of Frank Beamer as opposed to what the Virginia Tech job is now. And it's very possible at Virginia Tech. So Bud Black, the defensive coordinator, longtime defensive coordinator for Frank Beamer, is going to be the interim coach there. And I think it is entirely possible that Bud Black just keeps that job. Like, that was the thought for a long time, that he's kind of the coach in waiting. And they've kind of waited too long now. Bud Black is now 56. People have been waiting for Beamer to go for probably the last 5 or 6 years. But he's kind of old now. He's 56. But it's not too old for him to take the job, I guess. So it would not shock me if he just kept that job. But, yeah, I think that's a job that is good, or people think it's good, because Frank Beamer was good, not because it's an actual good
completely
job.
I forgot Frank Beamer's name. But it just
seems
like that kind of job that he takes it because he's like, oh, he's going to do well here. And then it just sucks him in because he's struggling and he gets stuck there, and then, like, he ends back up at Memphis in 3 years.
Right.
And that just doesn't seem...
I think that Maryland is a better job. I think Miami is a better job. I know Georgia is a better job. I think South Carolina is probably a better job. I know that USC is a better job. So I just, like, there are a lot better options. If Fuente is just hell-bent on leaving this year, there are better jobs open. He does not have to settle for Virginia Tech. I don't understand that.
Yeah, a little scenario I've thought about. I'm not really – I've kicked it around. I don't think it's going to happen. But say Les Miles leaves for USC. I think he would be perfect for LSU. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. I doubt it does. It's got like a 20 or 10, less than 10% chance of happening. But that's an interesting scenario that could maybe play out, and that he would take the LSU job and kill it there. He could recruit Texas, he could recruit Mississippi, he could recruit Louisiana, and just kill it.
That's certainly something. Honestly, I think he would kill Georgia. I know that's really far away from his comfort zone, at near the Big 12, area. But, my God, I mean, if he can just keep half of the recruits in the state of Georgia, he can field a top 15 football team. And with the way that guy develops talent, recognizes talent, just his system, the way it works. Like, he's probably going to be successful wherever he goes. It's just all about where he wants to go. I think that's probably what it boils down to. And I think you said it. He can afford to stay at Memphis as long as he wants. He's built it up to where he can win in the AAC for a long time. It should be no problem for him. He can wait for the perfect job. I don't know that the perfect job is out there. Listen, I know Georgia is a great job. I know USC is a great job. And I would advise Fuente to take either one if he was offered either one. I just don't know that he will be offered either one, So if it comes down to going to South Carolina or staying at Memphis, if I had to bet money on it, I would say Justin Fuente is probably going to stay at Memphis. Now, Paxton Lynch, I don't understand it, because – if the guy is guaranteed to go in the first two rounds, which basically if he keeps up the pace he's going right now, it sounds like that's probably what's going to happen. I think he's crazy to come back. It doesn't mean he's not going to stay, but I would advise completely against it. I'd tell him I think it's – why does it seem like people are starting to think that he will come back?
It's just the way he talks about – like in press conferences and stuff, like he talks about school, like, and talks about Coach Fuente. Like, he actually may not even be thinking about it. We just have not really sure. Like, I think he's one of those guys that just wants to finish school. He wants to win with Fuente, and he wants to win in college. And I don't think he's concerned much as to what happens after college. I think he's worried about college completely right now.
What are the chances the Tigers finish the season undefeated?
Oh, Tigers finish undefeated? I go 50%. They get past Navy, and if they get past Houston, they're going to finish undefeated. 100%.
Okay.
I think they're going to beat Navy. I think it's going to be close, but... that Houston game is going to be tough. Whoever wins the Houston-Memphis game is winning the AAC.
Right. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that going to Houston, that's tough. I mean, that is a tough proposition. It's certainly no, I won't look any less on the Tigers if they slip up and lose that game, because Houston is very good, and Tom Herman is fantastic there. Like, he is awesome, and my
He's
guess is he probably gets
50.
A job soon.
That's who I'm looking at. That's who you should watch out for the Miami job.
Right. That wouldn't shock
Tom
me at
Herman.
all. Okay, quickly, Tiger basketball, and then we'll wrap this thing up. No Austin Nichols. They're bringing in,
nope,
I think, 8 freshmen and 10 new players overall, so two transfers and 8 freshmen. You've got 6 guys coming back from last year's roster. Shaq Goodwin is, I guess he's the best returning player that you have. You know, Kedron Johnson will be back. Ricky Tarrant may end up being your best player. He certainly got the best resume of any Tiger player, what he's done in college basketball at this point. Dedrick Lawson is probably the most talented player, but should people be excited for Tiger basketball this year?
Oh, yeah. I think there
okay.
should be really some excitement, because they're going to be better than they were last year, that's for sure.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, 100%. They're definitely going to be better. There's no way that they're not.
Like how many wins?
They could win around 20 games, 20 to 22 games. But even if they win 18 games, they're going to do it in a better fashion. They're not going to lose their exhibition game on Friday. They're going to be a lot more prepared. Because talking to Coach Pastner, he's really learned. He learned a lot from last season, it sounds like, about the rotation, about how he handles things. And I think they're really going to use what he learned and kind of be more prepared. They have more talent. They're going to be more prepared. I think the schedule is probably a little bit easier in some spots. It wasn't supposed to be, but Louisiana Tech lost their coach. And then I don't think Manhattan is going to be that very good, but they still play. Like, second game of the season is going to be huge, play Oklahoma. And then they turn around, play Ole Miss, Ohio State. So they have some tough games, but I still think I don't know if they can make the tournament. It depends how they do in the AAC, but
right.
They're definitely going to be better, because the Lawsons are awesome. KJ is insane already. Dedrick's going to be hitting threes. He looks good. What you need to watch out for is Nick Marshall. Nick Marshall is going to be very good this season. Very good. Center, center out of Lexington, Tennessee. He's going to have to play a bunch. He's good in the high post. He can run the floor. He can defend. His footwork around the basket needs a little bit more work, I think. But I think he's going to be awesome.
So, think better. Okay. Who needs to be the best player on the team if they are to make the tournament?
Shaq,
okay.
Definitely. I think, he has the potential to be very good and to probably be the best player. He has tons of potential. I don't think the Lawsons are going to quite tap into what they seem like 2-year players to me, especially KJ. KJ seems like a 4. I don't – Dedrick kind of seems like a 2-year player. But, I mean, they're going to be good, but they need Shaq to be great, because he's been there before. He knows what to do. He – can defend. He's going to have to be their best defensive player and best player on offense, but now they're kind of playing back to what they did in his sophomore year when he was so good. They're playing fast and not dumping the ball into the post every time. Austin Nichols isn't there to slow things down. They're going to be moving the ball. He's going to be in he's going to get more rebounding opportunities with Nichols gone. I mean, you remember the first game Nichols went out last year with his ankle injury, he had 20 rebounds. I mean,
right.
If he stays focused and healthy, he's going to be very good this year.
Yeah, the talent has never been a question for Shaq. You know, he's always been a super talented guy. It just, I don't know what it is with him. I don't. He just, it feels like he's never broken through. And maybe this is the year to do it. Listen, he doesn't have another year. This is it. This is when the time that gets capitalized on all that.
I think
Ricky Durant may. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I think the thing with Shaq last year was Austin Nichols kind of did. I mean, he became the Tigers' best player, and he kind of overshadowed Shaq because of how great he is. And they
right.
went into the style of play that was better for Austin that may not have been as good for the team, if that makes sense.
Right.
They should have been, they played fast like Memphis does and Josh Pastner does. You play fast, but then they slowed it down. They were dumping the ball into the post or into the high post to Nichols to make a play, and they were relying on him so much that Shaq kind of disappeared for long periods. And some of that's foul trouble, which he's prone to get in, he needs to stay out of. But I really think he's going to bounce back.
All right, last question. So we're recording this on a Tuesday night. It is 6:15, so before the Grizzlies play the Kings. But the college football playoff was just released. I don't know if you've seen this, but
yeah, I'm
watching
right
Tigers,
now.
Yeah, they sit at 13. You okay with that?
I don't understand a few of the teams in front of them, like Iowa, Utah, Stanford. But no, it's good for the first one. They need to start winning, or they need to keep winning, I should say, if they want to keep moving up. I think they could definitely, if they win out and they win the AAC tournament, they should absolutely get that number four spot that Alabama is in and doesn't deserve right now.
I think that that's true. I think if they went out, listen, you're beating Navy, you're beating Houston, you're beating Temple, and I guess you would have to beat one of those two. Would it be Houston a second time in the AAC championship game?
It'll probably be Temple.
Temple, okay. So you'd beat Temple a second time, man. That's a heck of a resume, to be quite honest with you. That is a good resume to be undefeated. You played four or five really good football teams with four or five really good wins. I think that they would certainly have an argument to get in there, and I think they certainly would deserve to get in there. But that's certainly, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, because that is much tougher said than done. Jonah, I appreciate you doing this, man. We'll do this again
no problem.
Sure, because there's some good Tiger stuff, some good NBA stuff we can always chat about. Hey, real quick,
sure.
Pimp out your Twitter handle and all that.
Oh, I'm at Twitter at JMJ247Sports. You can find me at Grizzly Bear Blues or Go Tigers 24/7. Should have a bunch of Memphis basketball stuff going up this week and football stuff as well on the Navy game.
Awesome. Jonah, I appreciate it a bunch, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.